Hi, I'm Gianna Volpe, and thank you for listening to The Heart of the East End on 88.3 WLIW-FM, the show where we get to the heart of any matter at hand with folks from all walks of life on Long Island's only local NPR radio station. We stream online at wliw.org/radio and welcome your comments, questions, and collaborations of all kinds on The Heart of the East End. Opening up this edition of The Heart of the East End with Touch the Sky from the Black Pumas self-titled record from 2019. It is Medical Monday. So for this Medical Monday segment, we're very grateful to Karen Soka of Canio's Books because she set up a really neat panel for this morning. Not only do we have Dr. Cheryl Cashin, the Managing Director at Results for Development, but the City of Albany's Treasurer, Darius Shahinpour, on the line with us to talk about the New York Health Act. I guess let's start this with you, Catherine, since you were kind enough to coordinate this. What is single-payer health care? You know, I read an article from January saying that, you know, universal health care is still a long way away in New York from last month, but maybe you know stuff that I don't. So let's start with you. What is single-payer health insurance, and what is the New York Health Act?
Well, first of all, Gianna, thank you so much for having us on today. We really appreciate it. It's single-payer health is an important issue, and I would argue that it's closer than ever before. The state has had the New York Health Act in debate for the last several years, and we have right now we're just lacking one state senator in order, as a sponsor, in order to make this a reality. So with COVID, with everything that's happening, with the stress on our healthcare system, we feel like this is the time to seize the moment and have a single payer system. It simply means that a single payer will pay for all of our health bills as opposed to the spaghetti mix of private insurance company that we have right now.
Right.
There's such tremendous savings in allowing that. So people can think of it as sort of like Medicare, but actually covering more services for less.
And I have to imagine, you know, we'll get into this a bit with Dr. Cashin and Mr. Shahinpour, but, you know, I have to imagine that the costs to Medicare through COVID have been quite a thing. So the New York Health Act, under that, all residents of the state would be enrolled in a state-run insurance health system, healthcare coverage that removes copays, finding in-network doctors. It would sort of streamline the process. It looked like, I was reading this article from last month from The Gothamist, and it says that, so I guess if Darius, if you don't mind handling this next one, it's saying, you know, New York State currently facing a $6 billion budget hole fueled by rising Medicaid costs, and that, you know, most of the energy and advocacy around healthcare expected to take place around that gap. You know, progressives arguing against Medicaid cuts while Cuomo seeks reductions. Have you looked into this? I mean, what is it? What does our financial system look like, and what could it look like if the New York State Health Act were to pass?
Thank you also for having us. As a city treasurer in Albany, I've taken a look at this more on the local level than the state level. But the spaghetti bowl analogy that was just given is a great way to describe it. We have a patchwork of systems. We don't really have one sort of healthcare system. We have different systems that apply to different people. And it depends on your employment status, your wealth, and a whole host of other issues. While there is a gap, certainly for increases in Medicaid costs for, you know, COVID and other circumstances, healthcare is expensive. But it also really points to the fact that healthcare is really a hidden tax on everybody in the state. Having single-payer health care will essentially combine all the different rates, the different methods of paying for your health care and put it into one package, and thus saving taxpayers in the state. Estimates I've seen at the state level are in the tens of billions of dollars. And what I've done is in Albany is actually take a look at how that extends to property taxes, because our health care system is a huge drag on our local municipalities in the state, both upstate in Albany, where I live, but also on Long Island, where your listeners are. It's essentially the cost that we pay as municipalities for health care, for our employees, for our retirees, and also the Medicaid costs that are foisted on county governments, on Nassau and Suffolk County on Long Island, are enormous cost drivers for our property taxes. And I can talk more about that if you'd like.
Yeah, you know what? I'd like if you go into that a little more. And when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about, you know, we have this money at the federal level. It probably would make sure, you know how people complain about pork roll pork? You know, it seems like this would kind of force a directive as far as some of those dollars are concerned to really go toward helping the people.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of pork in Medicaid costs.
No, I guess what I'm saying is that if health care were something that were dealt with on a state at a government level, you know, that there would be less money that was misused. Am I saying this right?
No, I think you're absolutely correct. The statistics that we see on the administrative costs of public health care, Medicaid and Medicare, as opposed to private insurance, are really astonishing. 3 to 5% overhead costs for public health insurance and 20 to 25% for private health insurance. And that's a lot of money that goes to profit, CEO salaries, things that don't advertising, things that don't directly go to provide for people's health care, and as such, it allows the companies to essentially charge municipalities for and health insurance costs that are really out of control, and we as municipalities and businesses as well don't have any control over their health care costs. So the cost can rise dramatically, not quite as dramatically as we saw in Texas with the electricity bills this past week, but not too different from that. 1 year it could be a 15% increase, next year it could be a 20% increase, next year it could be the same. And it's very difficult for municipal budgeting. It's very difficult for businesses to work in that environment. So putting all this money and putting all this service into one pot will achieve a lot of the savings that we're talking about here. In New York State in the tens of billions of dollars.
I guess as such, is that one of the reasons why this has taken so long or hasn't been as popular? If it's, you know, it stands to take money out of the pockets of people who are used to getting it, I guess?
Well,
this has been going on for a long time, right, this
sure.
process?
Yeah, I would agree that's part of it. The other part of it is I don't think the sense of urgency has been there the way it has been over the last several years. And I think that's because the costs have spiraled out of control. For the city of Albany 30 years ago, our entire health insurance bill was in about $500,000. Now it's $27 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how much. You look at the statistics for how much we spend as a percentage of our GDP in the country, it has pretty much doubled in the last 20 years. And that's an enormous amount of money that we spend on healthcare in this country, and we have to find a way to do it more efficiently. And I think there's also the cultural hostility to taxes and increasing in taxes. But what people don't seem to do often enough, and which is what I have done in the city of Albany here, is to take a look at what the savings are, not the tax increases, but the actual tax decreases that will result from this.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. This is incredibly interesting stuff. Very grateful to Darius. Am I saying it right? Shanfar. Shanfar. Got it.
Yeah.
No.
With a name like that, people.
No. Shanfar. We like to say things correctly around here. All right. The treasurer of the city of Albany, Dr. Cheryl Cashin, the managing director at Results for Development, will bring it to you in a second. Catherine Soka of Canio Books. We're talking about the New York Health Act, and you're listening to Long Island's only local NPR radio station, WLIW. WFM. We're going from Touch the Sky to Touch Me from the Doors, but even though we're hopping back to 68, it is 2021. Don't touch people, you know? Keep your distance, you know, unless they're in your pod and, you know, you're being safe about it. We'll be right back here on Long Island's only local NPR radio station, WLIWFM. M88.3 on the FM dial, WLIW.org/radio online or however you stream radio. This is your Medical Monday segment on the Heart of the East End. Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe. Can't you see that I am not afraid? What was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made? Now I'm gonna love you till the heavens stop the rain. Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe. Can't you see that I am not afraid? What was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made? Oh, yes, the Doors on your Medical Monday Heart of the East End segment. We're going, it looks like I've got, we're going from Touch Me to Touching Aborigines, Ray Redd's 2012 record. We'll be playing Living in a Bubble in just a bit, but first we're going to return to our bubble right here on the East End and speak with Dr. Cheryl Cashin, the Managing Director of Results for Development. I wanted to go back into the money discussion with Darius, but I feel like since I talked about living in a bubble and that's where we live, Dr. Cashin, can you tell me a little bit about what you do and how you got involved in this, I guess, this journey? Are you looking for the New York Health Act to pass?
Well, thank you so much for having us. And so my journey really has been largely in global health for the last 25 years or so, working on global health systems, working with countries that have a lot less to work with than we do to achieve universal health coverage in their countries. And a lot of them do that through a single-payer system. And so a couple of years ago, when I realized that we had this New York Health Act that could actually pass, I turned some of my attention to home and to really look into this bill and what we could do to get it passed. And it really is, I would say, best practice. It's a really excellent bill that takes a lot of things into consideration and is a really, in fact, elegant and simple solution to our health system challenges.
What do some of the people who are against it say? I have to imagine it's probably something that folks that with a lot of money that are used. How exactly does it work? Would it change anything? I mean, because I think that probably some people who are don't want it. It's because they're used to a specific doctor. I don't know. What are some of the reasons why people might not want universal health care or a single-payer system?
Well, I think I've come to the conclusion that it's the devil you know problem. You know, our healthcare system is quite difficult for people, even who have good coverage. When they need it, they find out that it's not as good as they think.
Right.
That there are claims denials and all kinds of obstacles to get the care that your doctor thinks you need. And we have plenty of stories of that. And then once you enter the system, getting surprise bills and all of the things that you just don't know until you need it. And so it's a bit of a fear of what you don't know. And I think what we have to really understand is that it is not too good to be true. Sometimes it sounds like this is just too good to be true. We can get better coverage at lower cost. And in fact, it is a very simple solution. I think it solves some of the problems that we don't realize in our system that no other country at our income level does.
Can you give some examples?
Sure. I'll give the two biggest examples that have really become clear during the COVID-19 pandemic. And that is no other country at our income level ties health coverage to employment. And in doing that, you know, we saw over the past year when 20 million people lost their jobs, that led to almost 15 million people losing employer-based health coverage. And that's laid off people and their dependents. And so tying coverage to life-changing circumstances really doesn't make sense when losing your job means also losing your health care when you're at your most vulnerable.
Yeah. And you think about the fact that that in turn probably makes the problem even worse because you're thinking about this person who's already under a severe amount of stress, losing their employment, and now and when you're stressed out, that compromises your immune system even more. I have to imagine that this is just really made that the pandemic that much worse.
Yes, and for a country that spends as much as we do on healthcare, to introduce that level of insecurity when people are vulnerable, it just really is unconscionable. We've also learned, I think, that channeling our health financing, the financing of our healthcare through private for-profit insurance companies has also been quite devastating over the past year. We know that we pay too much for too little in this private system. As Daria said, at least 18% of our premiums that we pay in to private health insurance coverage goes to profits, marketing, administrative costs. But what we also learned over this pandemic is that that money that we pay in, it should be able to be treated as a public asset to go and direct it to where it's needed most during a health crisis. But what happened is all that money that we paid in to the private insurers, it sat in their profit lines. When we stopped going to the doctor and the hospital for necessary care, as we delayed it, they added that to their profits. They had their most profitable quarter ever in the second quarter of 2020.
Unbelievable. Yeah, this is something that in many industries, I've been looking at where money goes and stays. And it's really interesting. I think about this also in nonprofits as well. When I think fundraisers, and I'm always wondering about accountability as far as these things are concerned. Darius, I'd like to go back to you. You wanted to speak about a connection. Were you talking about real estate or what did you want to speak about before? You wanted to go further into something.
Yeah, total property tax savings is what I wanted to talk about.
Oh,
but
yes.
I actually, if Catherine could speak for a moment, there's an event tomorrow night.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, thanks, Darius. Yeah, just very briefly, I want people to know if they're interested in what they hear and they want to learn more, tomorrow at 6:30, PEER, the Progressive East End Reformers, is having an event which will include the Senate sponsor of the bill, Senator Gustavo Rivera, along with Darius. There will be a doctor on the call in addition to Dr. Cheryl Cashin. And if you want to, the event is sponsored by PEER, P-E-E-R. If you want to find out how to register, you can email peersouthfork@gmail.com, and I can mention that at the end of the program.
Okay, thank you.
As well. And while I've got the mic for the moment, I'll just say, Jonna, just for you to know, Fred Thiel, our local assemblyman, has been a strong supporter of the New York Health Act for years. So there is strong support in the assembly, and there is also rising support in the Senate. I think there's 31 sponsors right now.
Wow.
Wanted to put that out there, and maybe Cheryl or Darius will mention how we pay in the U.S. per person twice as much for health care as other countries. Anyway, back to you, Darius.
Wait. So, okay, hold on. Twice as much. And you said maybe it was Darius, or was it you, Catherine, who said we just need one more senator? Or
not
we, but it would be needed. So one more senator would be needed for this to pass? So that does seem kind of close. I don't know. I mean, Darius, you might know a bit more about the passage of bills. How close is this to passing, and what does it look? You know, what is it looking like?
Well, I pay some attention to the Capitol building across the street from us, but not too close all the time.
Right.
I think it's closer than ever. I believe the one senator. I'm not sure if it's actually for passage or for reintroduction into the Senate.
Right.
But I think overall it is far closer than it has ever been because the political will is there. If you look at a Fox News poll, it will tell you that 70% of the people in this country want their taxes to pay for their health care. It's that simple.
Wow.
Yes. I was astonished myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I actually tuned into Fox News on Election Day this past year, and they ran their own polls on the side of the screen, and you can see it there, the dramatic support for people in our country who want their taxes to pay for their health care.
So it looks like it was saying it would need the New York Health Act would need $139 billion in new tax revenue, 156% more than the state currently collects, according to a Rand Corporation study. You were saying, Darius, that we have to look at the savings in addition to new taxes. So can you just talk about a little bit about, open that conversation up and talk a little bit about the specifics?
As the treasurer and CFO of the city of Albany, I'm also the receiver of taxes. So I send out everybody's tax bills, which makes me a very popular person this time of year. But that being said, if you take a look at just how much our city, in the city of Albany, we have a city tax levy, a school tax levy, and a county tax levy. And if you take a look at the healthcare costs that each one is forced to pay, and you compare that to what the tax levy is, the numbers are pretty astonishing. We could actually eliminate the county tax in its entirety in Albany County because we pay more than what we charge in taxes at the county for our Medicaid share and for employee health care. If you take those costs away, and this is even increasing the cost to the employer because the payroll tax would go up to the employer and to employees, more to the employer than the employees. But even if you add that back in, it's still more than the entire tax levy of the County of Albany.
Wow.
At the city level, it's about 40 to 50%. It's getting closer to 50% now. And at the school level, it's about 20 to 25%. And the school, the amount of your tax levy that is charged for schools is fairly similar in school districts around the state in the 15 to 25% range for the most part. So that applies to Long Island, and that applies to upstate New York. Cities and towns are a little bit different in it, but generally speaking, the larger point is that we spend so much money on healthcare that is a huge chunk of our property tax levy. And in the city of Albany, I've calculated that we could cut our property taxes 30% and maybe even more.
Stop it! I'm totally listening to you right now. Okay, so also the thing that to look at is nobody wants their taxes to go up, but if you're thinking about the fact that How would it work as far as going to the doctor? How much would the, you know, it's like you look at, okay, my taxes are going to go up, but if you're also eliminating, I have to, you know, every time I go to you said no copays. So every time I go to the doctor, that's a couple $100s, you know? So I have to imagine that people like me would actually go to the doctor for the first time.
That's absolutely true. You take all those out-of-pocket costs, which for city employees, that's about $2.5 million for the city of Albany employees that we pay out of our pocket for the health care that we're already covered for.
Right.
You know, people out there listening can raise their hands if they like paying copays and deductibles.
Right.
I can't see anybody, but I'm pretty sure no one raised their hand. And no business and no municipality likes dealing with their insurance companies. Every year it changes. Every year we go through this process. Who likes dealing with their insurance companies? Take this headache off our minds. Take it off the backs of businesses. Take it off the backs of municipalities. And we can do this more cheaply and more efficiently if we just get over our hostility to government.
Treasurer of the City of Albany, Darius Shahinfar, joining us with Dr. Cheryl Cashin, the Managing Director of Results for Development, and Catherine Soka of Canio Books. We're going to play one more track, and then we'll wrap this segment up with a bow. Thank you all so much for joining us on the Medical Monday segment of the Heart of the East End. I'm Gianna Volpe, and this is our very own Ray Redd, Living in a Bubble. We'll be right back here on Long Island's only local NPR radio station, WLIWFM.
Your life is a fan. Everywhere you go, you only see the place where no one says no. You're living in a bubble, like a stork's head in the sand. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble around. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble around. We see, even on TV, agree with what they say, they do it every day. You're living in a bubble, like a stork's head in the sand. You avoid a lot of trouble with a dream of the promised land. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble round. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble round. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble round. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble round. Avoid a lot of trouble round. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble round. You can't disagree, even when they hate. You just close your eyes, avoiding all debate. You're living in a bubble, like a stork's head in the sand. Avoid a lot of trouble with the dream of a promised land. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble around. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble around. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble around. Living in a bubble, avoid a lot of trouble around.
Big thanks to City of Albany Treasurer Darius Shahinfar. Dr. Cheryl Cashin of the Results for Development and Catherine Soka, excuse me, of Kenio Books for educating us about the New York Health Act. I'm going to give it over to Catherine to remind you about how you can find out more at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow, I believe she said. But first, I just wanted to hear a little bit more from Dr. Cashin about this before we let you guys go for the morning. Again, thank you to all of you for being on with us this morning and letting us know more about what's going on up on Capitol Hill in Albany. Dr. Cashin?
Yes, thank you so much, and thanks for this great discussion. I just want people to know that this is not a scary leap, that the part of our healthcare system that people appreciate the most in general is Medicare, and this would, you know, put the funding in the hands of a government agency, but our doctors and our hospitals would be there operating the same as usual. We would just have choice and no worries about surprises. So I think this is a great opportunity to get everyone informed and get behind this.
Talking about being informed, I think that I just said something ignorant. You don't call it Capitol Hill in Albany, do you, Darius?
Oh, we just call it the Capitol
yeah,
for the most part.
The Capitol building, the one across the street. So you work across the street from the building?
I do, yes.
What's that like?
Well, Albany's a fantastic city. I look at that beautiful, glorious Capitol every day when I come to work, and we have our beautiful, glorious City Hall here that's 150
yeah.
years old
wow.
and on the National Historic Register. Albany's a great city, so everyone should come up and visit.
I thought that I would live there. When I first moved to New York, I remember driving by. It looks like the Emerald City from The Wizard of
it
Oz.
It does.
And you've been there since 2014? You've been the treasurer? In Albany?
I've been the treasurer since 2014, yes.
Is that unusual or is that standard? I mean, that's a long time to hold the same position in government.
No, I think it's...
No?
No, it's an elected position here in Albany, so it's in a lot of localities, the CFO is not an elected position, but it is in the city, like New York City is as well. But it's a great place to be and a great position to be in. And one of the things I really enjoyed about it is the chance to take a look and research issues that I care about, like single-payer health care. I was a former staffer for Congresswoman Gillibrand when she was in Congress before she was moved to the Senate. And when we looked at it back then, the numbers were not as scary as they are now. And we tended to look at it from a 30,000-foot level. But as the city treasurer and the tax collector and the CFO, I got a chance to look at it really on a granular level.
That is, you know, and before I let you go, first of all, I wanted to say, you know, thank you for what you do. Obviously, you're doing something right since you've been the CFO since 2014. Can we just look, you talked about going from $500,000 to $27 million. How many years was that?
And can you about just, 40.
Over 40 years.
About 40 years, yeah. The larger point is that, yes, it was 40 years ago, but that was such a smaller percentage of our budget and a smaller percentage of what we pay nationally 40 years ago as a country towards health care. And the costs have skyrocketed since then.
Right.
And they only were really reined in to a certain extent by Obamacare, which has been consistently undermined for the last 4 years. The larger point is that this is that 16% to 18% of our GDP that we are putting towards healthcare is a drag on the rest of our economy.
Would this change? Because when you look at healthcare costs and you look at like what something actually costs versus what it's charged for, because when you think about how hospitals or how people charge. The difference between someone without health insurance, for example, for the same service versus someone with insurance, it seems like the numbers don't reflect what's actually happening and the actual cost of the service.
I just got a knee replacement 2.5 months ago, and I saw my bill for about $40,000.
Yeah.
And I was quite astonished at all the things that are shoveled in there for my one-day stay in the hospital for a knee replacement surgery.
That's how they get you, you know.
Exactly.
Or the how they get the insurance companies. It seems like it's like just monopoly money at a certain point.
It seems like it sometimes. And the theory being that our insurance companies, being a private for-profit enterprise or even a non-profit enterprise, they would pay closer attention to these things and, you know, not just play with the monopoly money, but it seems to be that way.
It's interesting stuff. All right, so Catherine, people that want to learn more about the New York Health Act, what else is going to be talked about in this peer? Is it a Zoom session? How is it working?
Yes, so thanks again. We really appreciate this, Gianna. It is a Zoom session. It's tomorrow at 6:30. For those who would like to register, there's two ways that they can do that. They can either send me an email at peersouthfork@gmail.com. That's P-E-E-R, southfork@gmail.com. Or on Facebook, they could go to Peer's page, which is peer/NYPAN, N-Y-P-A-N. Find us and you can get the information there. Peer is a multi-issue grassroots organization, and we are a chapter of NYPAN, which is a statewide organization. It's committed to advocating for issues that impact all of New Yorkers, healthcare, housing, justice, and the environment. So we will be discussing these things that Dr. Cashin and Darius has mentioned tomorrow at 6:30. Plus, we will have the actual sponsor of the bill with us, Senator Gustav Rivera, and also another medical doctor, Steve Auerbach, will be able to answer some questions.
Very cool.
We welcome local municipal officials, healthcare workers, small business owners, really anyone who's interested in learning more about it. We want to have them join us.
Thank you so much for joining us. And just a note, I did get a note from Dr. Mikolos talking about, because I was wondering, and one of the things that I imagined was part of this equation was something like what the doctors have to pay in order to practice. And he did note that malpractice insurance, $290,000 a year in Suffolk County, $180,000 for delivering babies, and talking about, you know, pharmaceutical lawsuits built into the price of medicine. So it's like these are complicated issues. But if you want to learn more about the New York, go ahead, Darius.
Well, I was going to say one of the things that single payer healthcare does is it takes away the cost in medical malpractice for future healthcare that's necessary. It's all of a sudden that's not a cost that the insurance company has to bear anymore. It's spread around to the larger insurance base, essentially.
Really? See, this is important stuff. This is stuff that I think that a lot of people don't, you know, this is goes back to what Dr. Cashin was talking about, the devil you know. And, when you're imagining this, like, people fear the unknown. So there's all of this application of the way things are now into a new system, but that doesn't, what are some other things that would not be there that people are sort of imprinting the way things are now into the way things would be?
We've talked about deductibles, co-pays. We talked about property taxes being able to be reduced at the local level. I think it's the same thing for businesses. I've seen statistics that place the cost of health care on a new car that you buy is $2,000 to $4,000 per vehicle. That would be reduced. For doctors in particular, and I come from a family of doctors who are not exactly prone to wanting more government involvement in the medical field, who have all become proponents of single-payer health care because they, as business people, are sick and tired of dealing with multiple insurance companies and the amount of money that they pay, that the medical field has to pay just to deal with insurance companies, let alone their own health insurance for their own staff and for themselves. They're tired of it, and they have to spend more time and spend more money battling with insurance companies than actually serving their patients. So those costs are taken out of this this healthcare system.
Unbelievable.
There's all these hidden costs that run throughout our system. That healthcare, as I said before, is a drag on our economy because it essentially takes productive capital out and puts it towards bureaucratic costs that are enormously more expensive than what Medicaid and Medicare bureaucratic costs are.
It's an interesting conversation and definitely pertinent, especially with what's going on right now. It looks like everyone is reevaluating the way that they spend their money, no matter what area of life it is. This morning, we talked about the New York Health Act. That was Darius Schoenfar, the City of Albany's treasurer, Dr. Cheryl Cashin, the managing director at Results for Development. Catherine Soka, thank you so much from Kenio Books for getting this panel together for the Medical Monday segment this morning. I'm going to let you guys go. We went a little further or longer than I had expected, but important stuff, interesting stuff. Can't thank you all enough and look forward to the next time that I have you on with me. I'll let you guys go. I'm Gianna Volpe, and this is Paul Simon. And you, whoever you are listening out there in Radio Land, you are awesome, and you're listening to NPR.
Hey, thanks, Gianna. Have a great day.
You as well.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. There was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. It was a dry wind, and it swept across the desert and curled into the circle of blue. And the dead sand falling on the children, the mothers and the fathers and the automatic earth. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. It's a turnaround jump shot, it's everybody jump start. It's every generation throws a hero up the pop charts. Medicine is magical and magical is art. Think of the boy in the bubble and the baby with the babbling heart. And I believe these are days of lasers in the jungle. Lasers in the jungle somewhere. Staccato signals of constant information. A loose affiliation of millionaires and billionaires and babies. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in the corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry.